Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I got that message since you're calling in. Okay, there I am. Okay, I'm in, and it looks like she's in. Let me make sure I can get her in.
Monica, okay. Can you hear me?
Now, yeah. Okay, we are live, actually. So I think we're live, aren't we? Okay, customer support,
you
still
there? I don't know. Can you hear me? Monica, can you hear me?
Yeah, Carla, hang on 1 second, okay? Still got customer support on. Hold on.
She can hear me, so you might as well get on.
I am.
Okay.
Everyone, this is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. We had a rough start there. Had some Blog Talk Radio was having some technical difficulties, but it looks like we're good now. Okay, Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, are you with us?
Hey, we sure are. We have dialed 24 times, and we finally made it.
Blog Talk Radio, I got a message saying they were having technical difficulties, so after I got knocked off, I called the customer support line, and she reset the show and got us up and running, so it looks like we're good.
That's wonderful. Well, we're thrilled to be here.
Okay, great. And I know we were going to be continuing the discussion on the archetypes, but we did get some questions submitted. Did you get those in time that I sent earlier?
I haven't looked. I probably did. Why don't you go ahead and ask the first one, and I'll get it up on the screen. It doesn't really matter. Just go ahead and ask them.
Well, do you have a riff tonight?
I do have a riff. You want to do that first?
We can. I thought that maybe
we might do the questions first, and I could do the riff second.
You know, that would make more sense, being that the riff is about the archetypes discussion. Yeah, so that makes sense. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and go to the first question. This is from Sinead91. Hello, all, and most notably, Carla. I'm an avid reader of the Law of One, and to this day find myself pondering some of the questions left unanswered by Ra. I was hoping you could tell me, please, who Don thought Spectra of the Nine was, if you're permitted to comment, of course. This is from Sinead91. And this is referencing the Raw session 710.
Who the Raw is?
No, Spectra. When Geller and Pujard saw Spectre.
Well, it looked from the information as if they were contacting Yehovah or Yahweh. But that's just a guess. And a lot of the material that they gave jived in very well with the Law of One. There were things that were political about Pujarch, and there were things in the Spectra material that did not seem to be totally positive. We do not tell people about channel material one way or the other. We tell them very simply, read it for yourself and see what you think. If it has guidance for you, if it is helpful, we would be the last people to say don't read it. I think that your discrimination, just your discrimination, is the very first thing. Feel your insides, the way you're taking the material in. How does it make you feel? If it makes you feel uplifted, hopeful, faithful, full of joy, that kind of positive feeling, then it's working for you. You know, this is positive information. It is inspiring you. And if it makes you contract, if you have fear, if you don't really know if some of it's true or not, and you're concerned about it, and it makes you worried and concerned about the future, then those are signs of a mixed contact or a negative contact. Just to give you an example, Jehovah in channeling in the Bible gave Moses the Ten Commandments. Moses was a very positive channel. Jehovah was a very positive guy. Whatever, social memory complex. They were halfway responsible for creating, for guarding this planet. They were one of the those that worked under the Council of Nine for this planet. But they made mistakes. They, as it's told in the Bible, you know, they had a larger race, a stronger race, and that was genetic diddling. It's in the Bible. It's coded, but it's there. So they were trying to do the best they could to help the planet hear the Law of One. And so I think that for the most part, when I read the stuff, there was a lot that was in common with the Ra's channeling of the Law of One. So that's a hopeful sign. But I really can't say more than that. Jim, do you have anything?
No, that was before my time. I didn't know about Spectre and Geller. You and Don were associated with them before I joined
you all. They gave me the whole thing of the channeling. It was a huge amount of channeling that they got at one point. And I read through it. And we hadn't had the raw contact when I read through it, but we had had a lot of channeling, and it fit in well with the Confederation channeling that I had done. It seemed to harmonize well and be very positive. Now and then, there were things about it that were questionable, I thought. But on the other hand, who am I to judge for somebody else? So please use your own discrimination. And don't let anybody else tell you what's good for you and what's not. I've given you a little guideline there. You know, if it makes you feel expansive, it has that kind of feeling, then it's positive for you. If it makes you feel contracted and fearful, then it's negative. The Confederation positive entities would not talk about things that would cause us fear. That would not be something that would be the mark of a Confederation channel. So judge for yourself, sweetheart. I know that that's a rough answer, but it's the one that I always give. I've really stretched it talking to you about Spectra since I did read much more than is in the book Uri, which was published in 70-something. I don't know, 74, 75? Anyway, in the 70s, and it was before the rock contact. So I was working to help Fuharich at the time, spent a lot of time at his place up in New York, a little bit north of the city, and as I said, read through all the Spectra contact, talked to him a lot about it, and it would fit that he would be following Jehovah or Yahweh, because he was, culturally speaking, had a background of Judaism in part of his family. So generally you pull in what is vibrationally vibing in with who you are and the level that you have gotten to. So it felt very much his contact, in spite of the fact, of course, that other people were channeling it. And sometimes he would get information on his watch or on the tape recorder where the buttons would go down by themselves, and he would get messages. Don saw that happen. I didn't see that happen. But it did happen, and a message would ensue, and it came through in usually a somewhat mechanical voice, like maybe it was generated by a computer. Back then, computers didn't have voice very smoothly, and it definitely sounded computer-like. So that's about all I can tell you about that, and I hope it helps.
Okay. Thank you, Carla and Jen. Okay, the next question is from Bereaved Daughter. My mother died from cancer a couple of months ago. We were always close, but a few years ago had a major disagreement regarding a financial investment. My mom helped me get out of debt in order to start a business and expected me to continue paying her after the business was successful. From my perspective, I paid her back for everything, but she expected me to do more for her when her house got foreclosed. I took care of her when she got the cancer and did everything I could to help her, and we made peace. But after she died, I started having intense nightmares about her, and I'm still having the nightmares. There's also been a lot of bad things happening, like losing our rental house, having a wreck, and some other things, as if losing my mom wasn't bad enough. I'm trying to make sense of it all. She seemed to really believe that she was going to be healed, and I think she was actually surprised when suddenly she started getting worse very fast and then passed away. So here are my two questions. Number one, if a person dies unexpectedly with unresolved anger towards someone and they're surprised to find themselves on the other side, can they continue to haunt the other person by appearing in their dreams? And secondly, if a person is very loving and compassionate but still has a lot of unresolved anger, can they still be harvestable? Thank you. This is from Bereaved Daughter.
Hi, Bereaved Daughter. Number one, I do not know if your mother was harvestable, but most people who love their families and who are just regular people are harvestable. Most people would give you the shirt off their back if you had a problem, and very sympathetic, and are thinking about how to help other people. And it sounds like she was very giving to you and helping you start a business, and that's very indicative of a loving and compassionate person. A person doesn't have to be perfect to get into fourth density. It has to be thinking of others 51% of the time, either actively or in a vague kind of what do you think about kind of a way. Or, you know, are they thinking positive thoughts? Are they thinking when they think of somebody else, are they thinking how they want to use that person or how they want to hurt that person? That's negative, obviously. So anything, it's pretty easy to see the difference. So my guess is that she made it just fine. And if she didn't, it doesn't matter, because she's just going to continue on with third density until such time as she is harvestable. There's really nothing to grieve about in either case, because she is fine. She is being healed from her incarnational point of view, and after she does that, she'll be moving right along into incarnation again. And third density is not that bad. Fourth density is desirable, and it's likely that she made it, but I can't say. Okay, getting to the question that as it concerns you, I imagine her getting into heaven, as we used to say, is more important to you than anything else. But secondarily, it is possible for a haunting to take place, but only if she were obsessed by that. And it doesn't sound as though she was an obsessed woman. It sounds as though she made peace with you, she forgave you. My question to you is, have you forgiven yourself, or do you have guilt? Because generally, when we have nightmares like that, our minds are working with the material that we haven't solved for ourselves. They're working with things maybe we don't think about when we're up and, you know, awake, because there are other things to do and it's useless to think about it and so forth. And so maybe you have not yet focused on your grief and how you feel. Do you feel guilty about that? And I know Ann Landers always says this, but it's true. A lot of times you can get help by going to the right therapist. It's possible that a person that had hypnotic regression as one of her or his skills might help. You would be able then to try to talk with your higher self, get in between incarnations and ask questions of your higher self, get a deeper picture, get a picture from a wider point of view about your life right now. Also, just talking with somebody when they're very sympathetic and they're good at what they do can help a lot in helping you work through the grief, the anger, and the guilt insofar as you have it and, you know, feel you haven't done enough. And I'm not saying that your guilt is correct, but it's very likely that you simply have not yet forgiven yourself. Your mother is probably well on her way into working with healing presences on her own trip and is not haunting you. I don't think that one thing causes another thing to happen. A lot of bad things happen to good people, and sometimes they happen so fast that your head spins. And you think, how can I possibly deserve all this stuff? There's this, and there's this, and now there's this, and then something else hits you, and oh my God, how can I deal with this? Well, it's easy to think that, but the truth of it is, sometimes these things happen. It's useless to think, well, why did it happen? Because you don't directly cause an illness or losing a home or, you know, financial difficulty or whatever. This is not always in your ability to do something. It just hits you. It just comes from who knows where and hits you. And so there's really no issue as to could I be causing all these other things to happen. No, no. Bad things happen to good people. It's as simple as that. It doesn't say a thing about your goodness as a person. But I don't blame you for wondering about it. You know, and again, this is a good thing to talk over, either, you know, with a family member or with the person that, if you go to church, the person that is the rector for the church, or a counselor. And I think that, you know, you might find help with that, but of course it has to be the right one. So don't be afraid to try a counselor out and simply ask for a reference so that you can use somebody else. Because people are not always compatible and you don't always fit. So usually the counselor realizes that and shifts you to somebody else. So don't feel like you have to stay with the first person you talk to. Find somebody that you feel very compatible with and you feel comfortable with, and then have that conversation. And I hope it's a really useful and happy conversation. Good luck, sweetheart. Jim, you got anything?
No, I thought you covered that very well.
Okie doke.
I think she did, too. I just have one quick follow-up question. This part I'm a little curious about. Do you think unresolved emotions do carry over? I mean, I know from lifetime to lifetime, whatever's unresolved, you know, that same catalyst will come back and, until the person works through it. But when they're in between lifetimes, do entities have emotions? Like anger? I mean, when somebody's discarnate in between lifetimes?
As I understand it from the description that the loved one gives and channeling throughout my time of doing readings from Confederation entities, after you walk the steps of light, in your violet ray body, just, you know, finding the degree of light with which you can work, stopping and going, okay, this is where I want to be, and it's the nicest place you can find, and after that place it gets too bright, too light, too much. Okay, so you stop there, you find the right place, and you say, this is it. And at that point, people come to you to minister to you. If you are focused on your folks, if you think you know, okay, this is what happens when I die, I will go and see my mother, you will. If it's something that you don't want, you probably won't. If you think that you'll get to talk with Jesus, you probably will. You have needs that are unresolved, and so according to these needs, you spend some time working with this load of unhealed karma and feeling and things you haven't forgiven until you have healed your incarnation. Now, I try really hard to balance that karma by forgiving other people and forgiving myself. So you don't have to spend a lot of time with this healing. But if you've gotten yourself into a difficulty, if you've done a lot of damage like Hitler did, he spent a lot of time working with healers. And as a matter of fact, wasn't he still in the healing process when we got that reading?
Right.
So it can take a long, long time sometimes. Or it can be very short. And then you sit down with your higher self, that mid-sixth density version of yourself has become a thought form. And spirit, in whatever way you want to put it, I think angels guard us, and usually there's one angel that is especially responsible for each person. So that angel would be a part of it. And sometimes you can have as many as 12 different people that are drawn to you by the beauty of your vibration and are helping you. So you sit down with those who want to help you, think it through, and you talk and get healed one thing at a time. Or if you find that it's too strong, it's that hearing karma that you cannot simply talk away. You work to balance the karma as very much as you can, and then the hearing karma you make that a part of the life that you're planning. You give yourself the chance to balance that karma. So you're always giving yourself another chance to find out what forgiveness is and to choose forgiveness over judgment. So this is all part of what happens when you die. And after that healing has gone on until your healers and you feel that you have balanced the incarnation and it's time to make plans, then you make your plans. If you're in fourth density, you make your plans about how things work in fourth density. I don't really know as much about that as I know about if you're going to incarnate as a third density person again on another planet, positive planet, for third density to work more on that. So you'd be planning your lifetime. You'd be choosing your parents, who gives you birth, who your father would be, who would perhaps be your mate, who might be lovers of yours or friends or those who were very important to you in business. You choose scenarios that will help you heal the adhering karma and that will help you serve and help you learn. And we all have issues we come in with. Even if we have no adhering karma, we always have issues. There are things we want to do better. So we set ourselves and our intention on an incarnational level. This is what I want to learn. This is how I want to serve. And these are the issues I want to take up. You plan all of these seemingly chance encounters okay? And you make agreements with all these souls that are also going to be part of your life there. And at that level, you make agreements. And then you move into another third density planet or into the fourth density planet. If you haven't made it, if you're still in third, I know that you get not just one chance, but you plan redundancy into everything. It's not just one mate for you. If you blow that and, you know, don't even recognize that person when he comes by or she comes by, there are other people that you also planned, and if you miss one, you'll hit another, and that person also will be able to help with your learning and your service. So, you know, redundancy is planned into this system that you make, and then you jaunt off into this next incarnation with this suitcase of the, you know, personality things that you've chosen, whether you're bright, whether you're pretty, all these things. You're pretty much set ahead of time. Because every situation has its lessons to learn and has opportunities for service. So once that's all set up, then you launch yourself into the next incarnation. If you're in third density, you forget all your planning. I would assume in fourth density you have memory of the planning, and the other people have memory too, because everyone's thoughts are known. So it seemed that there would be much more resonance to the planning in fourth density. Here we have a complete cloud, and it's just you have to pay attention to how you feel. If that person really turns you on, really makes you feel good, really gives you good vibes, pursue that, you know, the way, in whatever way you think is appropriate, and so forth. Not, you know, fanatically, but knowing that it's very possible that there are things that you're supposed to do together. I know that's the way I ended up with Jim McCarty and with Don Elkins. We had to have planned this ahead of time. So I feel very good that I had the opportunity to listen to myself when opportunities came to go with them instead of with someone else. I had a lot of choices. And these were the people that I thought were the best. And I was right, I think. I had the very best possible. Knowing a great man like Don was an incredible pleasure. Taking care of him was a privilege I'll never forget. Jim, on the other hand, is a very earthly person, not sort of a heavenly, saintly Elkins, but he's real on a different level. We connect. We talk. We have a real relationship where Don and I never talked, and our relationship, while absolutely beautiful, was not expressed. It was always on the level of silent devotion to each other and, you know, service to each other. So I had heaven with Don and earth with Jim, and at this point in my life, Jim is the most incredible help. I'm ill right now with not ill, but I have a surgical problem. It's not healing. My back is not healing. I have to have lots of care. And Jim is just devoting his hours of each day to taking care of me. So I don't think Don could have done that. He would have hired somebody. It wouldn't have been the same. So I'm in a wonderful position, the best I could possibly be. But, you know, this is a real hard thing. So bad things happen to good people. I'm a living witness. So carry on. Don't feel that you're being haunted. Don't feel that you're being targeted because of the fact that somehow you missed with your mom and you didn't do well enough. You need to focus on getting to the source of that guilt and then letting it go. But as far as how that works, Monica, is that a decent run-through of how things work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That was the same thing I was thinking when I read the question, that there's probably some guilt there that is, you know, she's her higher self is probably trying to let her become aware of her unresolved issues through
right.
her dreams. That was what
so
I was thinking.
It's much better if you heal them here on faith alone. It's a lot easier to heal in between incarnations because you know it all. you have no questions because you're aware on a level that we can only dream of. But that doesn't stick, you see. You're still dealing with adhering karma. You're still dealing with your own guilt. It's so much better to get to it and express it to yourself, understand it to yourself, and then forgive yourself. You can do all of that right here. Ross suggested a balancing. I've talked about it many times. We've gone through it a lot. And if you want, I'll be glad to go through it again. The daughter, I'd be glad to do it for you. But we can do that here. We can do that right here. So that would be something I would get on like anything. I would really be pursuing it. I'd talk to myself. I'd talk with loved ones that are able to help me, and I would talk, if I don't really have that kind of support in my personal life, I would talk with a healing type of counselor that is there specifically to talk to you about this that has come up. And it's very, you know, telling that it comes up in a dream, because your dreams are part of yourself trying to say, hey, I'd like to focus on this. Could we focus on this, please? So listen to your dream, not because your mother is trying to tell you something, but because you have not forgiven yourself. If it were a haunting, it would act entirely differently. It doesn't sound like a haunting to me.
Okay, now I'm curious. What is a haunting? What would haunting act like? And I have a couple other follow-up questions as well.
Well, you would actually feel the presence of the mom or the whoever it was that was haunting you. And she would be trying to tell you something, not in your sleep, but as you started to fall asleep, you'd be startled and taken painfully to a presence that you could at least know what she looked like. You'd know it was your mother, and she would be saying one thing over and over and over again, because she wouldn't be in the healing process yet. You know, haunting takes place when a part of the person has no idea she's dead, and she hasn't resolved karma in her life, and so this has become so huge in her life that it's consuming her. For instance, I had a haunting in my life when I moved into the apartment I moved into in, oh, I think it was 76, 77, something like that. Oh, no, 70. I moved into there in 78. And I didn't know it at the time, but the lady that had rented the place before me had a son that had just been put in prison when she died. And she haunted Don and me. And every time I went to sleep, I'd be interrupted in the process, and I would have this presence. And it was clear enough that I could see, you know, I get the impression of her age and her sex. And so after I got hold of myself, I was so startled for the first couple of times that I just told her to go away until she went away. But she was very persistent again and again and again. I could not get sleep. She would get me every time. And so finally I said, okay, what do you want? Which I should have done the very first time. But, you know, it takes a while. When it happens in real life, you know, it's going, you're so afraid that you blow it, you know. So I became more aware that, okay, I needed to deal with this. So I said, what do you need? What do you want? What's the matter? And I got the impression that she was worried about her son. So I went around and I asked the neighbors, what was with this lady? Did you know this person? And I got the information about the son and about the fact that he had just gotten into prison for a minor problem. He wasn't going to be in there very long, but he had to, you know, he'd done something wrong. He had to give his time to fulfill the state and fulfill the law, and that he was okay, and he was going to get out very soon. So I was able to bring this information to her, and she let me go. So, you know, if it were a haunting, you'd have something that you needed to do. Here, you don't have a presence. You're sleeping and you're having a dream that includes your mom. And I think that because of that, it's so much different. You have an unresolved issue that's caused by her death. You made your peace. You did everything you could for her when she was sick. But you have a continuing amount of guilt that you really probably didn't know you had until she died and you couldn't make it up to her anymore. So, you know, that can startle you into realizing that you need to work on it. That's all.
That was a very thorough answer, Carla. Thank you. I have a follow-up question on the forgiveness. Now, forgiveness is so important. Rob referenced forgiveness many, many times. You just referenced forgiveness. Now, is forgiveness necessary to polarize? Or, you know, why is forgiveness so important?
Well, it frees you. It's freedom. It frees you to act not on incorrect information, but on correct information. Not on fear, but in love. If you're worried about things and you're feeling guilty, if you're feeling angry, if you have these issues that you haven't resolved, you're getting totally incorrect information because people aren't wrapped up in the issue between that person and the other person. It may be representative of that person, and the way it happened may be typical of that person, but if it has affected you to the point that you can't love them, if you have split with them, then you will not be able to work with that person. You won't be getting positive information about the person. And so you're keeping yourself out of the light and in your shadow side. When you forgive, the karma stops. You are off the wheel of karma. You have no more shadow, and you're back in the sunshine, and you can react the way you know you really are, not with something that you are carrying over from another time. You know, forgiveness frees us to behave as we really, really are, so that we can show love more and more instead of going into, oh, here we go again, I hate this person. Or, oh, here we go again, I hate working with this person. Or, you know, those things that keep you from being free. I'll give you the example I always use. I'm sorry if you've heard it before. When I was only 21 years old, I got a job at the Speed School Library, working with a librarian there that was quite elderly when I met her. She had started the library in 1941. I was born in 1943. In 1964, I was 21 years old, and she was probably in her 60s. She didn't like men, and men were the only thing in the library. There were no female engineering students at that time, and this was an engineering library. So everybody that came into Speed School Library was a male, either a student or a teacher, who wanted to have to find some books or some material. And she was afraid of men. She was very nervous around men. She was a spinster, had never married, had never been close to any guy, and I'm not sure she ever did get together with anybody. She was much happier living alone. I don't think she was a happy person, but she'd never had help, and she didn't know how to use me. For instance, if the phone was ringing, it was my job as her assistant to pick up. I could be all the way across the library, up on a ladder, reading the shelves to make sure that all the books were in their correct position. And if the phone rang, I'd have to get down, walk across a very wide expanse of library, get into her office, and answer the telephone. Meanwhile, she was sitting right there waiting for me to answer the telephone because she had an assistant. This could drive you completely nuts, especially if you weren't getting anything done and had to go back and do this several times during the time you were reading the show. So that's just one example, but she didn't like the way I wore my hair. I had to wear it a certain way because the other way was too young. Everything, you know, she was very judgmental. And so I realized that here's my first professional job, and if I don't make it here, I'm going to have much more trouble in the future getting a break. That's just the way it is in professional jobs. If you can't get along with somebody, that really goes on your record. So I determined I was going to love her. That was the only thing I could think of. And this was not at a point in my life when I had the Confederation help. This is just me. It was logical to me that I was going to have to love her, because if I treated her like a person I loved, then eventually my theory was I would start loving her. And that's what happened. I started grinning when I saw her. I was delighted to see her. And, yeah, I was putting on. But I was putting on in good faith for the object of keeping this job and learning from her. She was willing to teach me everything about libraries. And after my year there, I knew everything about libraries. I could just start my own the next day, which I did. I got another job after that one where I needed to do everything, and I could. So she was wonderful, wonderful help. And every time I gave her positivity, every time I fussed over her, told her what nice, you know, her little fussy pin, how cute that was, and found ways to make her feel good. Maxwell Smart was on, and she loved that show. So I started calling her Chief, which is what Maxwell called his boss. And she loved that. She loved all of that stuff. And soon, I guess within a couple of months, we had the best of relationships, and she was just wonderful to me. And it was a matter of breaking through a lot of her fears. And I realized, at least within the first 2 weeks, that here was a very lonely, thorny person that was not happy and that didn't know how to treat anybody, much less somebody that she was supposed to be a boss to. And she just didn't have a clue. But she was so lonely, and she was so sweet, you know, when you got through that shell. And if you just could, then you were in the sunshine with her. And it got to be true by, like I said, within a couple of months. I looked forward to seeing her in the morning. I looked forward to the day with her. I could ask her anything, and she'd explain in long detail about why you did this, why you did that, what the function of it was. I learned my business from her. I went to school afterwards, and I got a library degree, but I never learned as much from the school as I learned from this lady. She was just incredible. So you can do it. You can balance dislike or other shadow emotions. It's a matter of working with that relationship. So I didn't have to forgive myself for disliking her. I just turned it into like. And we became one, you know, harmonious, and worked well together, and there was no more friction. And, you know, the idea is to go without friction, have a nice, smooth life, and don't have friction. So it's really very, very helpful to treat everybody like the Christ, because guess what? Everybody is. That's the truth of everybody. If you see somebody at the soul level, you see a shining star. And it's really important, when you can't see that, to take the time to get past your prejudices and your reactions and get to the place where you can see the soul and love that soul. And if you love the person at a soul level, then it's much more difficult to break unity with that person. You try hard for unity, and when you can't do it, then you take it into meditation, you take it into your musing, your times of thought, and you ask yourself, you know, where did this feeling come from and how can I balance it with love? And you work until you do, because you want to be free. A person that has issues is always going to feel trapped. A person that doesn't have issues has a lovely life. It makes all the difference. And I like having a good life. I like liking the people around me. And so I focus on their good qualities. And if I have something that I really have to say to that person, I do. But I find a way to say it lovingly. And I don't make people mad at me because I do work with myself until I'm at the point where I'm sharing from the heart. And so that, you know, I can work with somebody and, you know, adjust the situation without causing a disagreement. It's a skill that you only learn if you work on the soul level with yourself and really ask yourself to see people at that level as much as possible. And if you don't, then do the work to cure that disability so that you are free again to love.
Okay, thank you, Carla. We have just a few minutes left. I think we have time for one more question, perhaps. Let me tell you the question, and if you think that it needs more time, we can leave it till next week.
Okay, well, okay, I'll have to give it to Jim because he's much shorter.
Well, I don't know. This might be a quick one. This is actually from me, okay? This is my question.
Okay.
What do you think about the idea of walk-ins? You know, when a lot of people believe that that they are walk-ins, that another entity took over their body and the first soul left the body, ending the incarnation without dying,
yeah.
And the new soul inherits the memories.
Yeah,
do you think that's really true?
Yeah.
And if so, is there anything in the Law of One to back that up, or why do you think that is true?
Rod talked about it when he talked about Abraham Lincoln. And let me get Abraham Lincoln to see. It'll take me a little minute here to get on Abraham Lincoln, and meanwhile, I will start start talking about this. As you said, a walk-in is somebody that makes a pact with you, and there's something in your life that you want to do, but you're overcome, and you simply can't do it. So you find this person finds you, actually. Okay, here it is. Don asked, we discussed Abraham Lincoln as a rather unique case. Is it possible for you to tell me what that orientation was and why the fourth density being used Abraham's body when this took place with respect to the activities that were occurring in society at the time? And he said the entity was fourth dimension or fourth vibration. That was the walk-in. And his motivation was, here's what Ross said. The one known as Abraham had an extreme difficulty in many ways, and due to physical, mental, and spiritual pain, was weary of life, but without the orientation to self-destruction. In your time, 1853, this entity was contacted in sleep by a fourth density being. This being was concerned with the battle between the forces of light and the forces of darkness, which had been waged in fourth density for many of your years. This entity accepted the honored duty of completing the one known as Abraham's karmic patterns, and the one known as Abraham discovered that this entity would attempt those things which the one known as Abraham desired to do but felt it could not. Thus the exchange was made. The entity Abraham was taken to a place of suspension until the cessation of its physical vehicle, much as though we of Ra would arrange with this instrument to remain in the vehicle, come out of the trance state, and function as this instrument, leaving this instrument's mind and spirit complex in its suspended state. The planetary energies at this time were what seemed to this entity to be at a critical point, for that which you know as freedom had gained an acceptance as a possibility among many peoples. This entity saw the work done by those beginning the democratic concept of freedom, as you call it, in danger of being abridged or abrogated by the rising belief and use of the principle of the enslavement of others. This is a negative concept of a fairly serious nature in your density. This entity, therefore, went forward into what it saw as the battle for the light, for healing of a rupture in the concept of freedom. This entity did not gain or lose karma by these activities due to its detachment from any outcome. Its attitude throughout was one of service to others, more especially to the downtrodden or enslaved. The polarity of the individual was somewhat, but not severely, lessened by the cumulative feelings and thought forms which were created due to large numbers of entities leaving the physical plane due to trauma of battle. So that was the deal with Abraham. So the entity was a normal earth being who chose to leave the physical to allow an entity to use it on a permanent basis. This is relatively rare compared to the phenomenon of wanderers. And that's what Ra has to say about Abraham.
Okay,
so
thank you.
And pretty rare, but it does exist, according to Ra.
I'm going to make a real quick interjection here. Anybody that's listening live, this will continue to record, so you can catch the rest of the show in the archive. It'll be up in about 15 minutes. But just a quick follow-up. So it's pretty rare then, because I've heard a lot of people say, oh, I'm a wanderer, and I'm just wondering, how do they know that if they have the memories intact? And I've even had someone tell me that I was a wanderer, and I mean, not a wanderer, a walk-in, and I don't think I'm a walk-in. And I'm like, why do you think I'm a walk-in? You know, and,
well,
you know, psychics
would know.
Have said,
if you were a walk-in, I think you would know. I mean, this is a fourth density entity that made that agreement, and I think the entity did not lose, you know, his fourth density isness in working through the karmic patterns. So I think he knew what was going on. So
you think, okay, you think you'd know then?
You'd know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that people get hold of the concept and they really love it, you know. And they think, well, I could do that. I remember when Ra talked about the old race. There were only 150 or so that had graduated in the second minor cycle. And he identified them as the ones that were contacted and were in George Hunt Williamson's book and channeling by, what was the guy's name? The contact?
Brother Philip.
Yeah, Brother Philip. So, Brother, that I don't know if that's if that's still in print. We have that in our library. It's probably a very rare book by now. But at any rate, Brother Phillips, we have it on a tape, the tape of what channeling is. And I think, I mean, you know, a disc now. It's been changed to disc. And you can get that from us, looking for Brother Phillips channeling. Absolutely lovely. Anyway, there were only 150 of these guys. But I've had so many people say, well, they thought they were part of the old group that were the very first wanderers, and they really were natives of this planet and not brought here from other planets. And, you know, 150 of them in the world, and I've had at least two dozen people say that they were, you know, it's doubtful. But it's just a very taking concept to a certain type of person, and that they want to be, you know. I mean, we have a lot of people that say they channel Kuo or Ra, and we hear about it, and it's lovely. But I understand why people would want to do that. Very unlikely. You know, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. But people get, you know, thoughts in their heads, and I'd like to do that, and it becomes, I am doing that. This is what I'm doing. This is who I am. And it comforts them in some way, and I see nothing against it. Unless it takes
them it might be a glamorous, you know, to think that, okay. Okay, interesting.
It's
thank you very much. Did you? What's that?
It's probably just a phase for most people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say it for a while and they don't anymore. Oh, I got over that. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, I guess that's it for this week. I guess we'll hit.
Yep. I just wanted to see if you had anything to add to any of that, Jim.
No, not really.
I mean, you can if you like. We did start late, so if you did have anything to add, a few more minutes, it's fine. No?
Carla said it well.
She did. She really, really did. Okay, well, hopefully we will resume our discussion on the archetypes next week, but we do have a couple of questions left over this week that we didn't get to that we'll get to next week. But I just want to thank you, Carla. That was a tremendously thorough answer that you gave. And I think she's going to get some value out of that. So I really thank you for that.
Oh, I hope so. Thanks, Monica.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure this evening. God bless everybody. We
love
you.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please check out llresearch.org, which is our archive website featuring the Law of One material, over 1,500 channeling transcripts, publications, interviews, speeches, and lots more. And also check out bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, which is the community website. We are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern for spiritually oriented questions for Carla and Jim. Please feel free to join us, and hopefully we'll see you next week.